halacha is one thing. Halacha says it's a mitzvah. That's what he claims. Number two, you can sell the kidney. But what's the but? The type of society that's going to be created here would be a society which we would have many reservations about. And here his formulation is not saying it. Public policy considerations should override what? The halacha, okay? A couple of pages later, he says the same thing about stem cell research. I believe, however, that Leon Cass, who happens to be a bioethicist, and others make a persuasive case that the cloning of embryos must be banned, and that we Orthodox Jews, based on these arguments, should support such a ban, even if pre-implanted embryos are not considered human beings by the halakha. But even though halakhically he claims they are not human beings, and that's up for arguments, but most say that they're not human beings, nevertheless, who should we follow? Leon Cass and his chevra, bioethicists who tell us to do something else. And therefore what? Halacha then demands upon us to follow the views of social scientists, ethicists, bioethicists, social critics. So he's presenting this as a programmatic statement, this particular author. So what I'd like to do this afternoon is exactly that. First, let's see if we're allowed to donate a kidney. Then if we're allowed to donate a kidney, is there a mitzvah? Is it a mitzvah chiyuvis? It's like any other mitzvah. Maybe it's not a mitzvah, maybe it's a dvar reshus. Or possibly we're not even allowed to. But assuming we are allowed to, then we will flip to the other dimension of the discussion. Well, can we sell kidneys? According to this particular author here, that question is not a halachic question. It's a halacha. It's an issue or issues which will be resolved by whom? By anyone who is not a halachic authority. Simply a social critic, a social scientist, an ethicist, okay? In other words, the question is public policy considerations. Does halacha simply take them as they are? Or will halacha filter it through their own prism and say, yeah, certain considerations we consider legitimate and certain ones we don't consider legitimate? This is a very important issue, not because I'm here this afternoon, but there's numerous contemporary topics in halacha which deal with this problem of halacha versus public policy. And what we'll try to show this afternoon, that it really isn't going to be halacha versus public policy as this particular author claims, as well as others do this in other articles also. And I'm not mentioning the name because it's really irrelevant. I'm using it as a springboard to understand an opposing position. The other option is, it's not halacha and public policy, but halacha and halachic policy, which means whatever public policy tells us, we have to filter to see if it fits the tenets of halacha or it doesn't fit the tenets of halacha. Because at the end of the day, if you make this split between halacha and public policy, you basically throw out halacha. Because basically you're saying is that halacha doesn't address everything. Okay? This argument is very different, for example, it's not the same argument. I don't know if you're familiar with the argument in Eretz Yisrael regarding territories, right? Can you give up territory? Okay? Well, it's a big machlokus in contemporary times. Can you give up parts of Eretz Yisrael? So according to most, you can't give up an inch. Okay? You're not allowed to give up an inch of any of the land of Eretz Yisrael. Comes along Rav Avadi Yosef, which people don't know because now he's somehow changed his mind, but in print, his position is, as well as the Rav, and for the same reasons, Rav Soloveitchik, as well as Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, whether you can give up territory becomes a question of pikuach nefesh. So for example, if giving up territory will save lives, then you're allowed to give up territory. But who makes that decision whether territory will save the lives of Am Yisrael and Israel? Who makes that determination? The Rabbanim? Who makes the determination according to Rav Vadi Yosef? Who makes that determination? Who?
The army.
The army, that's what they say. It's no different. That's what both Rav Vadi Yosef says, and the Rav says, I assume Rav Chassin also, Yom Kippur, right? Someone is a chole, it's a chole sheyesh bo sakana. You first turn to the Rav, to the doctor, to see what the facts are. Is that person a chole sheyesh bo sakana, or a chole sheyesh bo sakana, whatever the case may be. Once the Rav knows what the facts are, then he will apply the halakha. But the actual facts are determined by whom? Determined in this particular case, in the context of Yom Kippur, by a doctor, in the context of portions of giving up, relinquishing portions of Eretz Yisrael, by the Ministry of Defense and the rest of the Israeli government. That is not what we're talking about here. It's a totally, it would seem possibly be the same type of situation. We're not referring to that. There, in that particular situation, it is clear that the halakha is covering everything. It addresses the situation from Aleph to Tav. It addresses whether on Yom Kippur a particular person has to fast or not. They simply have to get the facts right. The Rabban have to get the facts. Who do they turn to? They turn to the doctor. In Eretz Yisrael, who do they turn to make that determination? If you paskin like Rav Avadi Yosef and the Rav, you turn to the Israeli government. That's not what we're talking about over here. Here we're simply saying something much more revolutionary, okay? That possibly there are going to be portions of the halachic psak which will not be rendered by halacha. They're going to be rendered by whom? By a person like Leon Kass or anyone else who has what to say, and then that Orthodox Rav would simply pick it up and decide, you know, well, maybe I'll take it, maybe I won't, maybe I'll accept it, maybe I'll reject it. So we're working in a much more dynamic venue, let's say, much more so than the case in Eretz Yisrael of relinquishing property. Okay, so let's begin. Yeah?
Is the question here one of a contradiction between halacha and public policy, or is the question that when the seeming halacha conclusion leads me in the direction that I can't be in, so that forces me to take another look at the sources and incorporate other halacha discussions,
right,
and therefore rule differently?
Okay, so the public, so put it differently, the bottom line is, if you look in the Gemara and the Poskim, they will probably not address the public policy per se as such. So what the public policy is, it's an incentive for the Posek to look at it. But then the question is, once you look at their arguments, okay, then it's up to you as a halachicist, as a Posek, to see through the prism of halacha whether their arguments are valid or not. It serves as an incentive, okay, to do it. Okay, have I answered the question or not?
I think so. I just think the second formulation is truer to point.
Okay, fine. It's more nuanced. Okay, but what you have to understand, without going into it, but there are lots of topics like women's prayer groups, bioethical topics, where this public policy notion is bantered around. Okay, and they use the word public policy, and it's a mistake. Obviously, it's public policy, but at the end of the day, for the Posek, whatever policy he is going to decide becomes halachic policy, okay? Any other questions? You don't understand? Okay, so let's begin with the main sugyas in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Gimel. That's the sugya of Lo Samar Al Dam Reyach. Ayin Gimel Amid Aleph, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the middle. It's page one, I suppose, on your handout. You see the Tosas Divrei Hamaskil Lahatzilo Benafsha. That's to the right of that is the Gemara. Right, Divrei Hamaskil Lahatzilo Benafsha to the right. Minayim l'roes chavera shu tover b'nahar, ochaya garasa olistin v'im alav shu chayim l'hatzilo. How do you know if you see someone drowning in the water, someone being attacked by a behema, by a chaya, or being assaulted by a goslin, whoever the case, or someone who's on? How do you know you're obligated to save that particular person who is a victim? Talmud lomar lo saman odam reyecha. The pasuk tells us lo saman odam. So the Gemara asks, v'ha mehacha nafka mehasum nafka. How do you know? Why do you assume that the source for saving someone is from the pasuk of lo saman odam reyecha? So the Gemara brings down the other Gemara in Bava Kama, aveda mehasum nafka. We learn from a different pasuk, avedas gufo minayin. How do you know that if a person's body is lost, that there's an obligation, an imperative to save the person? So the Gemara says, Hanamile benashra. If we only had the Gemara in Bava Kama to tell us that there's an obligation to rescue someone as an aveda, we view a body as an aveda, we would only know that what? That we would have to save him. In other words, if he is drowning, we would go in, swim, and save him. Avo mitrach umegar igure emalo. But the obligation to not only go in and swim, but to hire, let's say, a lifeguard to go in, hiring him and save him, we wouldn't know from the pasuk from Hashavas Aveda. So where do we know that not only is there an obligation to rescue someone, but also to invest money, finances to save someone? That we know from the pasuk of lo samod al damreyach. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. So let me ask you: I donate a kidney, which when you undertake a kidney is called a nephrectomy. It's removal of a kidney, and I give it to someone else. So the poskim all say this issue of donating a kidney involves possibly a suffix sakana. Okay, a possible risk, that's the term I want to use, suffix sakana for the person who is donating the kidney. From the Gemara that we read until now, can we extrapolate that a person has an obligation to save someone's life even if it's a suffix sakana for himself? Because if in fact it's so, this Gemara would be a source for saying you're allowed to give up your kidney, because the Torah says lo saman al dam reyecha, even if it's a suffix sakana for you. So from this Gemara, one way or the other, can you prove that? Yeah.
Isn't there a difference between immediate tukach nefesh? If someone's drowning, they're really going to drown now. If I don't jump in, even though it's dangerous for me to jump into the rapids, I have to do it. Versus,
in the case of the kidney, the assumption all the time that he's in a badai sakana. He needs a kidney. Okay?
But he's not going to die this second.
I hear what you're saying. It's not brought into the equation. Okay. It's not brought in. They assume you're a suffix sakana. That fellow who needs the kidney, the recipient, is a badai sakana. He needs the kidney, even though, like you say, it can be on dialysis. The question is, someone who's possibly suffix sakana, does he have to give up his kidney for someone who's badai sakana? So the question is, from this Gemara, can you prove one way or the other?
It seems that they're risking themselves. If you thought that the person is going to drown the water, you're supposed to go save them. You're saved from the scheme, from robbers. There is a risk involved already. So the fact that there is a risk involved, one can apply and say that, yes.
You know, what's the risk?
You're giving up your life on it. If you're saving a person from the robber,
yeah,
who's going to kill him, let's say.
Right.
So you are in a way putting yourself on the line.
So you're saying that's the case of what? Suffix sakana or not?
I would assume, yeah.
You would assume, yes. Yeah. All right. So let me read you a Sefer Meira Seinayim, and what I'm quoting here, everyone agrees with. So I just brought him. This is Choshen Mishpat. I don't have it in the packet. Tuf Chaf Vav Seif Aleph. He quotes from the Hagos Maimonos, the Talmidim of Marami Rudenberg, right? You have in the bottom of the Mishnah Torah, one of the Nosei Kalim. Kasvu de Birushalmi Masik In the Yerushalmi it says, nobody knows where this Yerushalmi is, okay? They claim it's Yerushalmi and Trumos, but you can learn that Yerushalmi and Trumos any way you want. In general, let me put as an aside, when you have stories, okay, no, Agarata or also, not Agarata, but stories in the Yerushalmi as well as in the Bavli, 9 out of 10 times you can learn that particular story in different ways. And that Yerushalmi Trumas, which Tzitz Eliezer quotes, everyone quotes, there are a couple of quotes, since everyone, Tzitz Eliezer quotes and others, can be learned in different ways, okay? Anyway, this Yerushalmi, this is what he says. The Yerushalmi Masik, the conclusion in the Yerushalmi is that Tzarech Afilu Lahachnis Atzmo the Suffix Sakana. According to the way the Sma and the Hagos Maimonides brings down the Yerushalmi, that even in a case of Suffix Sakana, you have to give up your life. And it's brought in the Beis Yosef, and he says, why? Because the recipient of your laje of saving somebody is a vadai sakana, you're a suffix sakana. Now listen to the next two lines. This is the most important part. Gamzer, referring to the Yerushalmi, Hishmitu Hamachaber, it's not brought in the Shulchan Aruch, even though the Beis Yosef brings it in the tour. Kevin Shahaposkim Harith Vaharambam, Vaharush, Vahatur, Loheviu Pipiskehem, Yishumhachi Hishmitu. Since all the classical poskim do not bring that Yerushalmi in their Sifrei Pesach, we don't paskin like that Yerushalmi, that you're chayev lahachnis yourself in a suffek sakana. And then they say, I don't have it here, everybody says it. And the Bavli, the Gemara we just read, doesn't paskin like that Yerushalmi. No one disagrees with that. In other words, Yerushalmi says, Lahaknis atzmo suffix sakana, it's an obligation. But the Bavli, everyone agrees, no one reads it differently. No one reads this Gemara differently, okay? Says, there's no chiyuv to be machnis atzmacha b'suffek sakana. You're no obligation to to endanger yourself in doubt. So now what do you say?
How do you answer another question?
Right, so how do you answer the question? Good. I'm not here just to give, I'm here for you to think. Okay? I had Rabban here who taught you how to think a long time ago. I'm not saying that, I didn't mean that that way. Obviously, a long time ago, sort of bad. I had one or two particular ones who taught you how to think. And if you didn't think, you didn't hang around the chair, you out of the room. Okay?
So you could say maybe
so?
Where you could explain
whatever.
There's, you know 100% the person is saving that other person, that there won't be any risk that will undergo. Because he knows that this will happen. The situation that nobody will be hurt.
Don't use your Gemara. Use your common sense. If I cross the street, the possibility of a car going to hit me?
Yes.
Possibly, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a good swimmer, I didn't bring in the Rambam, the Rambam makes a point that you have to know how to swim. If the Lashon is there, call Yachol La'atzil. Anyone who has the ability to save someone. If you don't know how to swim, you're not going to go into that water and save someone, okay? But even if I'm a good swimmer, okay, is there a possibility that what? That I may drown?
No.
Yes or no? There is. So therefore what? So if all the poskim clear across the board tell you that the Bavli says suffek sakana is not allowed, you don't have to endanger yourself, and Yerushalmi says suffek sakana, you are obligated to go in. So therefore what? No? Continue it. What's the logic?
And my question is how
I heard your question. We heard the question. So what's the answer?
Does it make sense? There's something missing.
Yeah, what's missing? So what's the part of the puzzle which is missing?
True understanding what the situation Sanhedrin brings in. What happened? What occurred
that the poskim did not want to comment on this and say that you personally.
No, they didn't paskin that way. They didn't comment. They refused to paskin like the Yerushalmi. They're paskining like the Bavli. That happens very often, right? They have the Rif and Erevin. Anytime you have a machlokas between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, we paskin like who? Bavli. That same Rif is used in Kabbalah also. I don't know if you're familiar with it, that if you have a stira between what's in Kabbalah, you know, it's filling the Cholamoid, different sugyas. And the Bavli says otherwise, we paskin like who? We paskin like what the Halakha says, not what the Zohar says in the Kabbalah. They make the same analogy as when you have a contradiction between the Yerushalmi and Bavli, but that's a tangent. Anyway, so let's get back. So therefore what? The suffix Lashana is what?
Maybe you can question their understanding of this.
You're right, obviously. So what's their understanding?
I want... The way they understand it, okay, if you're Yechalim Latzir, you can save somebody. You have the ability to save somebody.
Right.
But did they take into factors
that
there may be risks?
Obviously. The Bavli's taking... There is risk. But... Right,
you
that's the answer. There is risk, but... Right, there's risk. If I cross the street or if I swim, try to save someone, there is risk. But the halacha doesn't define it as what? At least according to the Bavli. Get there. What? Doesn't define it as?
As a fact.
Right, so it's not a suffek. Not a suffek sakana. That's exactly the point, okay? It's not, that's implicit in the whole discussion here, okay? That suffek sakana is something above and beyond the three cases, and there are other cases in the Rambam, in the Shulchan Aruch, which are risk also. But it's not a risk we're going to have cognizance of, which means that there's an empirical risk and there's a halachic risk, okay? What is considered halachic risk? Anything which is called what? Suffix sakana. Anything which is not a suffix sakana, empirically it's a risk, but halacha doesn't recognize it as a risk. Okay? So therefore we paskin like the Bavli, that in all cases you're not obligated to endanger your life as if it's suffix sakana for you. That's a halachic risk that we're not ready to take. And Yerushalmi comes along and says differently. Okay? Says differently. But the bottom line, the basement, or the line is that what? A certain degree of risk, okay, is allowed according to halacha. Okay? What is this risk called? So for example, the Radvaz, it's in your packet, he gives a different term. It's not suffix sakana because that's a high risk. It's mitzvah sakana. That's the term he used. So mitzvah sakana is allowed by the Bavli, and the Yerushalmi says we even go beyond mitzvah sakana, even to suffix sakana. And then what the Radvaz does, without going into all the tshuvas, to the tshuva there, you have the tshuva there, he basically tries to set up different categories of risk based upon svara. He uses logic. Okay, that's the way he defines his paradigm, how he deals with risk. Rav Avadia Yosef, if you go to page, he wrote an article, but it's towards the end. It's a long tshuva, and I think it was republished in Chelek Tes or Chelek Yud of Yabi Omer. Was written for a halachic journal many, many years ago. So if you go to page 14, that's how it's numbered. He has a different way of looking at everything. Whereas the Radvaz is using logic, usually using svara. Rabbi Yosef, in this one liner, if you go to page 14, the sixth line from the top, on the first, the first column, says what? Shomer mitzvah lo yedar davara, kaven deruba einam mistaknet. What is he saying here? Totally different from the Radvaz. We don't define suffix using our logic. How do you define suffek? What's shomer mitzvah lo yeda davara? You learned psachim? You learned psachim here a couple years ago. So you have a sugya and psachim of what? Shluchei mitzvah, einam hizakim. That's what the Rav Avadia Yosef is referring to. If you're doing a mitzvah, and Rav Avadia Yosef is probably the only one who says it's a mitzvah to give up your kidney, okay? That's what he paskins. Says, if you're doing a mitzvah, nothing will ever happen to you, okay? So he's referring, one second, he's referring to the Gemara in Pesachim of Shluchei mitzvah einam nizakim. But he conflates this svara with the second one. He doesn't tell you, but this is what he's doing here. Then he gives a second reason. Kevan deruba deruba einam mistakim. What does that mean? Since most, what? People, most patients are not going to be endangered by losing their kidney. This was written, I think, around 1974. This becomes very important. This particular chu was written in the 70s. That was his perception, okay, that since Rove will not be mistaken, therefore you're allowed to do it, okay? So what is he saying here? Yeah?
Doesn't it, I'm asking, I'm not making a comment, but I'm really asking, isn't it true that one kidney, if you only have one versus two, the other one works harder and ages faster or doesn't give
up? That I know.
So a person, the person today that gave his kidney to live a totally normal life as if he'd never given it before.
Right. Assuming he's healthy. I mean, the main problem of giving up a kidney is simply in terms of immunology. In other words, you have to find the right person who can match up with the recipient. Okay. So usually, when you donate a kidney, it has to be someone from your own family, because a third party you may have a difficulty. But the optimum situation is getting someone in your own family. It has to do with blood makeup and other makeup. Once you have the right person, a person who's compatible, that's the word that's always used, then the success rate, at least already in the time of Avadia Yosef, earlier it wasn't. I'll point it out later.
About the donor.
Now here, also, the donor is no. There's no problem.
Oh, okay.
No problem. There may be some post-operative issues, but you deal with them afterwards. So after you have the surgery, you may have certain issues, but they will all disappear. It's not something which is permanent, which is what you're concerned. Yeah.
You won't even notice any difference.
You won't? How do you know that?
I'm asking. You won't notice any difference.
No, you won't know that. You won't notice any difference. That's how it's presented that way. I'm not a scientist or a doctor to tell you, but whatever I had read over the years, I had learned the sugya many, 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 many years ago. There was nothing in there to indicate that it would make a difference. If it would be a danger to you down the road, that would become a big issue. Okay, how can you give up something now, be a danger later? Okay, yeah.
The second one we're talking about is only after the surgery or even during?
No, well, again, remember, all surgery, even elective surgery, involves a certain amount of sakana. Okay, but we're talking about the sakana afterwards. Again, this falls into the category of, you know, miksas sakana. Anything you do in life involves a risk. The question, will halacha recognize this as a risk? If they say, if they recognize it as a risk, they'll say, you have no obligation to do it, okay? But whatever you do, the minute you get up from bed, the minute you walk out of that bed in the morning, you're subject to a risk. You may slip, whatever the case may be, okay? But halacha doesn't give any cognizance to that type of risk, okay? Only certain types of risks that halacha will recognize. Yeah. You had a question, right?
No.
Okay. All right. So what Rav Avadia Yosef is saying is suggesting a second definition of risk. He says most people do not become endangered by undergoing this operation. And now he's not making a medical claim. He's making a societal claim, basically. There's a notion of Shomer Pesachim Hashem. Okay, Hashem protects simple people. Simple, whatever that word means, that pesi actually means. So, if society is willing to accept the risk, then there is no risk. Halakha will say there is no risk. So that's what Rav Avadia Yosef is saying. There are two rationales for allowing someone to donate a kidney. Number one, because he's performing a mitzvah. And number two, because society does it. As long as everyone around you does it, there's no expectation that there would be a danger, therefore you are allowed to do it. Okay. This is the second approach to risk. The third approach is really the approach of Rav Allenberg and the Tzitz Eliezer and the Igros Moshe and Rav Yitzchak Weiss, the Minchas Yitzchak. He says you look in terms of suffix sakana simply as a medical determination. Medically, if you have an nephrectomy, is this considered a suffix sakana for you? So Rav Moshe will say that it isn't, and Rav Waldenberg will say that it is. And since we paskin like the Bavli, suffix sakana, you're not obligated to give up your life. Therefore, you're not to undergo a nephrectomy. Now, what's important about Rav Waldenberg, and possibly Rav Weiss says the same thing as Rav Waldenberg, that particular psak was written, it was written 1960 or 61, Rav Waldenberg psak.
What kind of procedure are you referring to?
Removing a kidney, okay, giving it to someone else, okay? This psak was written in 1960 or 1961, around that time. Clearly, scientifically, at that time, it was definitely a suffix sakana to give up the kidney for someone else. There's no question about it. Rav Moshe's tshuva was written later, and like I mentioned to you, Rav Adi Yosef's tshuva was written, I think, around 1974. 15 years later, things changed dramatically in medical technology, and already it wasn't a suffix sakana. So it's very possible Rav Waldenberg, who actually was nifter just a month or two ago, would have changed his mind had he rewritten that tshuva and paskin like Rav Adi Yosef. Question, I don't know if he would or wouldn't have, but there's a good chance he would have changed his mind. And there's no record that he ever changed. This tshuva was written, as I say, 1960, over 45 years ago. And there were many tshuvas that he wrote afterwards, both in his Tzitz Eliezer, articles in Asya and other places. And there is no record at all that he ever changed his mind. So if you ask me personally, is it really a machlokas between Rav Adi Yosef and a Tzitz Eliezer? Personally, I don't think it's really a machlokas. Simply what? The metzias, the medical technology changed. In the time of Rav Waldenberg, scientifically, there was a problem that was encountered if you gave up your kidney. It was a suffix sakana for the donor, whereas in the time of Rav Adi Yosef in the 1970s, it wasn't. That's just my feeling. I may be wrong. But I say, there's nothing, there are no tshuvas where he readdressed that particular issue. So according to Rav Adi Yosef, it's a mitzvah. I think he's the only one who says it. It's an actual mitzvah to give up your kidney, to donate your kidney for someone else. Rav Levi Halperin, who is a halachic authority in Yerushalayim, was written mainly in bioethics, halachic bioethics, claims it's the Midas Chasidus. Okay? And the third approach of Rav Yisraeli, he was one of the leaders of Maftal, of Mizrahi in the 1960s and 1970s. He was America's Arab. He was the founder of Eretz Chemda. It's a halachic think tank in Yerushalayim. They just started a new Bezin a couple of years ago. So Rav Yisraeli Radachovsky, who's the dying on the Bezin of Yerushalayim and is going to retire in the next couple of months. He was a Maggid Shir in Karen B'Yavna. They both say that if the transplant, this kidney transplant, is necessary for sustaining someone's parnassa, for a livelihood, then you should do it. That's what they particularly say.
Is this sustaining the livelihood of the donor or the recipient?
Of the recipient, obviously. The donor is not... Right. Okay? I quote you all these things. If you're interested, there's an extensive article which is going to appear next month on this sugya in tradition. If you're interested, you'll find all the maramakomas that you'll ever want to see on this particular sugya. Halperin is in there. They're all in there, okay? Yeah.
What does it mean that it was, affect your life? I mean, does one affect their life? If someone needs a kidney,
that's the rationale they gave. For Parnassa, if he needs it for Parnassa, you have made Maybe it's really the donor, not the recipient. It's the donor. It's the donor. Okay, the donor needs it to sustain his livelihood. Okay, correction, not the recipient. If it's the donor, okay, the donor needs it to sustain his livelihood, which we'll come back to later on because that relates to the whole question of an international black market. Imagine poor people who don't have money and they need money, and a kidney, who mentioned to me, who said, how much money was for a kidney? On eBay?
A couple years ago there was a kidney on eBay. I think it got up to 60,000 or 70,000 before eBay came. We pulled the auction, said it was illegal, and I didn't let it happen.
Okay, so a poor person today, let's say in the United States, makes what? $30,000 a year? That's, let's see, huh? So for 2 years, he has sustenance for 2 years. That's at least for 2 years, okay? All right. So these are the three different ways of assessing risk. According to the Radvaz, it's based upon logic. According to Rabbi Yosef, it's based upon what society assumes to be a risk. And number three, Rabbi Yosef also to an extent, but let's say Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's based upon the level of medical technology. Whatever medical technology considers a risk, a suffix akana, that becomes the risk. Not what society decides, not what the logic of a posek decides. Now, yeah?
Just a bit of a technical question. We're discussing the interface between the Chiyuv Hatzala and the Machmis himself to a situation of Sakana.
Right.
Do you think that the Chiyuv Hatzala, when it's formulated, is that, so to speak, it exists categorically in every situation, and then there's this extrinsic factor called Sakana, so to speak, that says that don't save the person? Or do you think that it's an Ikar Hadin, so to speak, that when it was initially formulated, Chiyuv Hatzala is only in a situation where you're not being misakeh oneself, meaning that it's not called a Chiyuv Hatzala if it's a situation of Sakana. Not that the Chiyuv Hatzala always exists and we have this overriding factor.
Yeah.
And
what's the nafkamina?
The nafkamina would be, what if a person went ahead in a situation of Sakana and saved somebody anyways? Is there a Kiyuv of the mitzvah of Hatzala? Meaning, you ignore it, so to speak, the caution of the rabbis or the daraisa, depending on how you hold. I assume the issue of Sakana we're talking about is Mishmartim or the Lashosechem, or?
What do you mean?
Well, what's the exact issue of Sakana? Maybe I should continue it.
No, it's just Sakana, you're not allowed to. Yeah, okay, Mishmartim. Okay,
yeah,
fine,
so,
okay.
So I don't think that it's daraisa or Jeremiah.
Right.
If we assume it's daraisa for argument purposes.
So the nafkamina would be if you did it and what?
Yeah. Again, it might be more of a technical question, but just trying to understand this.
No one discusses in that. Who shear are you in?
Rabbi Sachs.
Okay. All right. No one discusses in that vein. Offhand, no one discusses in that vein. Now let's try to formulate really what's going on here. Whether you consider, let's even assuming that it's a mitzvah of pikuach nefesh, to save life, okay? What's on the other side of the equation? If I'm removing a kidney from myself, I am saving somebody, right? Let's assume it's a mitzvah, pikuach nefesh. But what else is involved when you remove a kidney? What possible isur is involved? Kabbalah, right? Usually we always conventionally think of Kabbalah as what? Assaulting someone else. There's a notion of being chovel atzmo, right? You assault yourself. So basically what you're saying here, at least according to one formulation of it, is that it's two-dimensional, the issue is two-dimensional, or the two prongs, let's say. On one side you have the mitzvah pikuach nefesh, on the other side you have the isur chabala, and if you say that the mitzvah pikuach nefesh exists, that you have to donate your kidney, basically what are you saying? That the mitzvah pikuach nefesh nullifies what? Or overrides, let's say, overrides what? Is doche, the isur of chabala, okay? So all these poskim who allow someone to donate their kidney, using this perspective, would say that the mitzvah overrides the lo saseh of being chovel biatzma, okay? However, there are at least two poskim who say, no way, that the Isur Chabala will basically be intact and the mitzvah pikuach nefesh will not override. And that's Rav Unterman. He was the Rav of Rashi during the time of the Six-Day War. He wrote a sefer called Shevet MiYehuda. It's a collection of all of his essays. A wonderful person. I had a chance to daven in his minyan in Yerushalayim a couple of times. A person who also was educated. He had he studied in England. He had told me he studied Romance languages, knew history. Eventually, he moved from England to Eretz Yisrael. He was there during the Six-Day War, and he wrote quite a few essays on Pikuach Nefesh, which appeared in Talpiot and other, mainly in Talpiot, I think, or Torah V'Hamdina, also both places, mainly in Torah V'Hamdina. Anyway, he's the one who claims, to my knowledge, the first one who claims that the Isur Kabbalah remains intact. So if you have a situation of a kidney transplant, too bad. You have no right to transgress an Isur simply in order to save someone's life for Pikuach Nefesh. And Rav Halperin, but not this Halperin, Levi Halperin, but Mordechai Halperin, another halachic posek who deals with bioethics in Yerushalayim, agrees with that opinion of Rav Unterman. But that's basically a minority opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're only given the errors if you don't transgress.
You can ask why. That's what they say. I hear you. That's the classic question you can ask right away. But that's what they say. Yeah.
Someone's dying, someone's over on Shabbos,
you're driving
to the hospital. So
what
we say that you can drive
them
to the hospital,
even
though you're over
an
Isser,
you're
driving.
Right, then it comes to question of Shabbos, if it's Hutra or Tchuya, right? What can you do? You may or may not be able to do everything in terms of, you can drive them, maybe you won't be allowed to turn off the motor. They're all different issues. Those are tangential issues, yeah.
So the point is, if you're saying you're not allowed to violate an Isser, even if it means that the result is going to be a life saved.
Right.
What's the difference between that and anywhere else that we do?
Okay. This is what he says, okay? I'm just trying to understand it conceptually. You can ask a lot of questions on that particular opinion. Okay, so this is one way of looking at it. That you have two prongs. On one side you have Pikuach Nefesh, the other side you have Kabbalah. Now I'd like to introduce another one, not my suggestion, someone I happen to know in Yerushalayim who introduced it, because it was never introduced. Lots of articles have been written on transplants over the years, dozens upon dozens of articles. And this particular Rav works for the Israeli government, he actually is the advisor of Halacha to the Israeli Knesset. He said there's a different way of looking at the whole situation. Rather than looking at it two-dimensionally, in terms of Pikuach Nefesh versus Kabbalah, you can look at it one-dimensionally. Look at everything through what? The prism of Kabbalah. Which, if you really want to know, can you donate a kidney? Look at the halakhas of Kabbalah. And based upon the halachos of Kabbalah, you will then arrive at your conclusion whether you can donate a kidney. Which maybe logically is connected to this problematic position of Rav Unterman, who says Kabbalah is the issue. So what they're saying is, yes, Kabbalah is the issue. But it doesn't mean necessarily that what? Even if Kabbalah is the issue, it doesn't mean that what? That you may not be able to donate a kidney. So what do they say? So they quote the Rambam in, Hilchos Chovel Umazik, Perek Hey, Halacha Aleph. Halacha Aleph, or? Yeah, Halacha Aleph. Famous Rambam. It's always quoted when it comes to all these issues in Halacha and Refuah. Asur le'adam lachbo, bein bi'atmo, bein b'chaveiro. There's an Isur not only to be chovel your friend, but also to be chovel yourself. And then I'm skipping a line or two because it's not relevant to what we're discussing. Then the important words. Derech nitzayon hareze over below sase. Derech nitzayon. Nun sadek yud vav nun sofit. If it's by means of Nitzayon, by the fashion of Nitzayon, then you're over the Losase. Then they quote the Pasuk. What is derech nitzayon? First of all, the two girsos in the Rambam, when we go into it, either it's derech nitzayon or derech bizayon, a disrespectful way, embarrassing way. Okay? With the Issur of Chabala is being limited by the fact that you're over it only if you don't, if you do it disrespectfully. But if you do it respectfully, you're not over the Issur of Chabala. Or as they say in English sometimes, if you can show a beneficial purpose to the Chabala, there is no Issur involved. Okay? So on the basis of this particular Rambam, Rav Rappaport, he is the son-in-law of Rav Moshe Tendler, he's the great-grandson of the Shach. He used to teach in the Gush, and now he teaches another yeshiva on the West Bank, claims this is the way you have to look at kidney transplants, through the prism of Chabalah. Are kidney transplants beneficial, or are they simply unbeneficial? He claims they're beneficial, and obviously the assumption is there's no danger to you, but he doesn't say that, okay? Since it's beneficial, therefore there's no Issur of Chabalah, and therefore you're allowed to have a kidney transplant. The same Rambam is used, for example, when you deal with what? Plastic surgery, reconstructive surgery. For example, the Chalkas Yaakov, Rav Moshe Klein, who's the Mishnah Halachos, okay, all paskin that plastic surgery is allowed for the same reason. It's Chabalah, which is what? For a beneficial purpose. It's not Derech Nitzayon, it's not Derech Bizayon. It's the same way of looking at this particular, using the same prism. So this is basically the first part of the shiur, okay? It's a machlokas whether you can allow someone to have a nephrectomy, to donate his kidney, assuming you can allow some. One says it's a mitzvah, one says it's a davar rishus, one says a midas chasidus. Generally, the predominant opinion is that you're allowed to do it. There's no mitzvah per se in doing it, okay? But you're allowed to do it. That's basically most poskim hold. Now let's get to the second side, which is really somewhat of the important side in terms of dealing with the whole issue of public policy considerations. Once you say you're allowed to donate a kidney, the question is, do you want to have that type of situation happening in society? Do you want people to donate their kidneys? And then number two, can you then get money for the kidney that you're donating? This becomes the important part. Once you involve the issue of money, so what are you concerned about? What's known in the English language as commodification. You're treating people and human parts as what? As objects rather than subjects. Human beings are supposed to be respected. There should be a degree of human dignity. How can you simply trade or sell body parts to anybody, even if there is a mitzvah involved, okay? And get money for it. How can you take money for it? It's a denigration of the human personality, it's depersonizing someone, it's commodifying, all the different terms that are used, okay? So what this particular Orthodox rabbi had said was, well, you turn to what the public policy people say, the ethicists and the social scientists. So I want to quote to you the famous Chazon Ish. This is the Chazon Ish in Choshen Mishpat, Simen Tesvav Chelek Aleph. Again, in his Likutim, Choshen Mishpat, Simen Tesvav Chelek Aleph. He makes the following statement, which is always quoted. Shehakol Mefurash Batorah. Everything is written in the Torah. So lest not one think that according to the Chazon Ish, he knew about copyright, or he knew about kidney transplants in his time, or he knew about stem cell research. What did he mean by Shakol Mefurash Batorah? Those things weren't known. But basically what he was saying, as it's understood by everybody, and no one really gives a contrary interpretation, is that look into the Torah and you will be able to find the solution to every single problem. Okay? That's what it means, Shahakal Mefurish B'Torah. And that's what we'll briefly try to do during the rest of the shiur. So let's go to the issue that basically the selling of a kidney is an affront to human dignity. So if you hold that you look at the kidney transplants through the prism of pikuach nefesh, okay, rather than Kabbalah, the first approach, two-dimensional approach, then can you sell a kidney if it's because of mitzvah pikuach nefesh? The answer is, logically, yes. If there's a mitzvah of pikuach nefesh, not only can you donate it, you can sell the kidney. One doesn't, there's no reason to assume that you couldn't sell a kidney. But for argument's sake, if you hold like Rav Unterman, who says that what? Selling a kidney is Kabbalah, is as if you, it's maiming yourself, you're assaulting yourself, and therefore it's usur. Can you sell a kidney? So the Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf Sada Gimel Amid Al, says the following: Hakeni uptzaeni amenash tehei pater. Someone says to his friends, Bava Kama Sada Gimel Amid Al, hit me and wound me, on the condition that you would be pater. In other words, you won't be chayiv kabbalah. Bahalo patzo. And that's exactly what he did. He wounded him. Harei hu patur. So we see from there that what? That he's patur. So on the basis of this, someone wanted to argue that, according to Rav Unterman, if it's Kabbalah, there's nothing wrong with it. Okay, you can make up any kind of arrangement that you want to. If entailed in the arrangements you're going to get paid for the kidney you give Reuven, it's permissible. Okay. If we look through the other conceptual framework, that's not two-dimensional, we look through Rav Rappaport's notion that we should look at Kabbalah. So what's the important question here when you deal with Kabbalah? What the Kavana is, what the motivation is in doing the Kabbalah. As the Rambam says, Derech Nitzayon, if you do Kabbalah, which is Derech Nitzayon, disrespectfully, your intention is to be non-beneficial, that would be considered Kabbalah. So what happens here if you want to sell your kidney? What's the story here? What should it be allowed or should it not be allowed? Looking it through this particular prism. The intent. What's the intent of the person who's donating and selling his kidney? Is it clear, first of all? Why not?
You could gain monetary benefit
while also wanting to help someone. Right, so you have both. You have the intent of possibly of what? Of the mitzvah pikuach nefesh, and at the same time, the intent is what? To make money. So therefore, the poskim, the achronim, split down the middle. Depends what you look at. If you're going to assume that the mitzvah overrides everything, it even overrides money, then you would allow it even though you're getting money. Others will say, the mitzvah, the fact that you want to make money, that basically neutralizes the mitzvah, and therefore you're not allowed to take money for those particular things. So, for example, the Tshuvas Vayeshev Moshe Sadek Dalid Sif Tes and the Mishnah Halachos Chelek Dalid Reish Mem Hei say that Pikuach Nefesh falls aside. Money seems to be the primary objective. We don't care if you're also doing it for a mitzvah. The minute the intent is to make money, that makes everything, so to speak, you know, in a very wide term, treif, according to the Mishnah Halachos and the Vayeshev Moshe. But according to Igris Moshe, Choshen Mishpat Aleph, Simen Kuf Gimel, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach in Nishmas Abraham, Chelek Dalid, Choshen Mishpat Simen Tavchav Sif Aleph say no. We don't care about the issue that he's going to make money. We look at the mitzvah. There's a mitzvah pikuach nefesh. If he's going to make money on the side, so be it. So this is the machlokas with regard to that. Now, what's one of the other things which is not brought up in the public policy consideration? Selling a kidney. Why would you think you should have problems with selling your kidney? Forget about the issue that you're not a person, you're not an object. What's the basic problem that only a Jew can understand that? Well, I should say only a Jew. Only a religious person could possibly understand that. What would be the problem of selling a kidney? Yeah?
Well, your body doesn't belong to you, it belongs to God, and it's just like a pet.
Right.
You know, you shouldn't be able to. If you're going to give a kidney for Pekuach Nefesh, then that's one thing. If you're going to give a kidney, you know, as part of your body that God made, just so you can make a quick buck.
Right. I'll leave out the buck part, but in other words, get to the point is you're selling a part of your body that doesn't belong to you. Is that true? Is that what Yadda says? You're claiming that Yadda.
The general principle. That belongs to you, I believe that's what Yadda says. That's why.
Maybe, maybe not. Yeah.
The concept of Rome Moshe discusses Tamid Tiyem and Shalokecha. It was in regards to.
What does Tamid mean?
That you yourself should be what Hashem gives you, whatever your life is, this you should accept. So the same thing with your body. Whatever Hashem gives to you, this is what you should accept for yourself. And not to go around and do changes for it.
You mean you shouldn't have a doctor or something?
You're talking about something. Well, what are you saying there? What are you saying this? Repeat what you're saying there.
The concept of Tamim is that a person himself shouldn't go and mess around with what Hashem gave him bestowed upon him. Right, you know what he's saying now. This would be fine.
That idea, I'm not so sure the idea applies here, but that's a very important idea in halachic bioethics.
Actually, it's
when you go, when you go.
Rav Moshe points to me, he discusses the concept and taste tax disease.
Right.
Because you have a child, the question is, if you know that you'll be a taste tax person, that will infect someone else. The argument against it would be that no, give birth to the child, even though it has taste tax, because it's concept of tamim tiyeim
asher. The same thing relates to the Talmud Chlokes Rabbi Blei from the Temple about taste tax. We have to check that. It's an old story.
Mm-hmm.
But it relates to even more fundamental, not more fundamental, but the question always comes up. The Gemara in Shabbos says it's the Medrash when you come up to Shemaim, they're going to ask you a couple of questions, right? What's one of the questions they're going to ask you? Supposedly, what is one of the questions? Asakta,
but
yeah, right. One is one. Did you negotiate in good faith? All right.
Were you honest in your business dealings?
Right. That's the same thing. What's the other? Asakta, bepiria. Okay. Did you engage in pruer vil? So what wasn't being asked here?
Said
you tried. What would you have expected to be asked on that question? Did you have right? That's not the question. What was asked? The question was a sakta bepurvivivya. What's the difference? Which relates to what you're saying today, right? You have all these different techniques of having children: artificial insemination, AIH, AID, etc., etc. Without going into the specifics, right? These are medical technological techniques for you to have children, right? What is that measure saying to you? Is that required? What's the question you're being asked? Asakta b'perivivya? Or was it? That was the question which was being asked. Therefore, what's the question? Did you try to have children? Okay. Doesn't mean you have to have children. You try. If you don't have children, you know, so be it, like you're saying. I don't know if Tamim Tiyeh Hashem Elokecha is that. Tamim means something else. But the idea is there, okay? So the same thing over here. There's no mitzvah per se that you have to use unnatural, artificial, technological, medical means in order to have children. This is the psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Nishmas Abraham. Rabbi Blei talks about it many a times over the last couple of decades. There's a Tosfos in Pesachim with regard to this also. Rav Halpern has an article many years ago also about it. That's like accepted. I never saw anyone say that you're obligated, right, to undergo these procedures in order to have children. Basically, we were all created with whatever potential we had. We use our potential, okay? It doesn't mean we don't have a right. If we want to use extraordinary means to have children, that's our prerogative. But there is no mitzvah. Okay, now there may be other religions who won't even agree with that. Okay, they will say that you can't even use extraordinary medical means to have children. Okay? You got a question? Okay, so back to the issue of selling body parts, all right? So you've all read The Merchant of Venice, right? In high school or in college, right? I assume, right? One time. So Antonio and who was the other one?
Portia?
No, it was someone else. One of the other figures in Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice decided that they were going to execute the contract. And if you refused, and if the contract was breached, the damages to the contract would be that you would have to give a pound of flesh. Okay? You would have to give a pound of flesh in order to fulfill the damages of the contract. So the basis of this story, many years ago in Lahore Halacha, you've heard of that, right? It's in English even. Rav Zevin, okay? He discusses whether such a kind of arrangement is mutter according to Halacha. So he says that type of contractual arrangement is usur. Why? The reason that you gave. That what? That your body doesn't belong to you, and you can't decide that the way that I'm going to give up my damages is by giving an ounce of my flesh. No one can make that decision. Neither the other person nor yourself. The body belongs to Hashem, and you have no right to do that. Comes along Rabbi Yisraeli many years later. It was republished in a Sefer Eretz Temda, and he said he agrees that your body belongs to Hashem, and he agrees that Rav Zevin's conclusion was right, but he disagreed and added a caveat to it. Yes, admittedly, your body belongs to you, to Hashem, but Hashem gives you the right to make certain decisions with regard to that, to your body. You have a quasi-ownership in that body, okay? But that quasi-ownership in your own body, how you're going to exercise your ownership with regard to your body is dictated by who? By the halachic system. The Torah will tell you when you can do what you want to do with your body and when you cannot do. Okay? So therefore, since in this particular case of the contract, he was going to lose an ounce of flesh. An ounce of flesh means what? Chabolah. And since Chabolah only is mutter if it's what? For a beneficial purpose. There's no beneficial purpose here. So therefore, Rabbi Yisraeli agreed with Rav Zevin that in this particular situation, that you cannot do it. Okay? But whereas according to Rav Zevin, the reason why you can't take an ounce of flesh is because what? It belongs to you. According to Rabbi Yisraeli, yes, the body belongs to Hashem, but to a degree, every person is a co-partner with Hashem in his own body. Okay? The degree and the nature of that partnership is defined by halacha. And in this particular case, halacha says what? You cannot give up that ounce of flesh because it is a chabola. On the basis of this machlokas, the chief rabbi of Ramat Gan, at one point he was the serious candidate prior to Rav Metzger at the same time. You know, because of politics, Rav Metzger got the job, serious politics. Supposedly, whatever. Okay? Rabbi Ariel. Have you ever heard of Rabbi Ariel? He's the chief rabbi. I think it's still Rabbi Rashi of Ramat Gan. He claims, let's apply this machlokas of what? Rav Zevin and Rav Yisraeli to kidney transplants, the selling of kidney transplants. So how would Rav Zevin paskin with regard to kidney transplants? Can you sell a kidney? Using the logic of the case of Shakespeare, so he argues, according to Rav Zevin, possibly you couldn't sell a kidney. But according to Rav Yisraeli, since the kidney is being used for what? a beneficial purpose. It's chabala, which is not derech nitzayon. Therefore, he says, according to Rabbi Israeli, Rabbi Ariel concludes that you would be allowed to sell a kidney, even though it probably ultimately that kidney doesn't belong to you. But since the halacha allows you to sell the kidney, because it's chabala, not derech nitzayon, it's respectful, it's beneficial, therefore it would be allowed.
Question.
Yeah.
Brit milah also would be considered a beneficial purpose.
What?
Brit milah, having milah, would it fall under this idea when he's saying, that both on whom you just mentioned, that it is a beneficial purpose, God commanded us to do this?
Well, I don't know, there must be, I'm not familiar, but there must be a sugya that deals with this whole issue about Brit milah. I don't know. You're using your logic. You may be correct. I'm not saying you're wrong, okay? I'm not saying that you're wrong, but yeah.
I said that Mario Diskin writes that the reason why.
Who does?
Mario Diskin.
Yeah.
That even though we have a Mesorah that Kiyam Avraham Avinu Kol HaParakul HaShem HaMitzvah, that the Avos kept all the mitzvahs, Avraham waited to be commanded about Bris Milah because of the Israel Chabal. It has to be nidcheis by some positive command. There has to be some force compelling you to do it. He says that's why. Why did Abraham have to be commanded about
Mila
if he was keeping all the
other mitzvahs? Yeah. The whole issue of Tzivui before Matan Torah is a big problem altogether. A huge problem, okay? Even for example, you have Zion mitzvahs, B'nai Noah, right? When were they given? When was Zion? In the Chumash, when is it supposed to point to the Gemara? Torah Shabbat Pez. It's Zion mitzvahs, what? B'nai Noah. That's prior to Mamad Har Sinai, right? So if you go through the Rambam, he does it how many times? He makes a point of saying every time he brings down Zion Mitzvah B'Noach, make sure you realize that he says it in one word, you got to catch it. The reason why Zion Mitzvah B'nai Noach are obligatory on B'nai Noach is not because of Noach, because of Mamad Har Sinai. He says it in Hilchos Malachim quite a few times, as if you didn't hear it the first time. If you didn't hear me the first time, I'm telling you three or four other times, okay? Everything stems, so that becomes a big issue. Yeah, I don't know what that means. I know what it says. No. I don't know what that means. Okay. I've seen things over the years and not exactly satisfactory. But everything stems, you know, so what did they do? What did they do before? Okay? Well, they were Mitsuva Vein Osa. Maybe that's what they were. Like a woman, right? She's Aina Mitsuva Vyosa. Maybe they were Aina Mitsuva Vyosa. Maybe they have a status of Aina Mitsuva Vyosa. But once you say Enim and Tzuviosa, so that has obviously a lot of Nafkaminas Lalach. Do you get far for that mitzvah, right? By women, Machlokas, Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi, I think, or Rambam, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbeinu Tam for sure. I mean, there are a lot of ramifications for that, so I'm going to get off on a tangent. Yeah. No? Okay. So this is one public policy consideration, which is seen through the prism of Halacha, the notion of selling body parts. Another issue is the issue, for example, of creating an international black market. When you sell your kidney, okay, you're creating all kinds of disparities in terms of society, right? One of the main ones being is that it's going to be an incentive, as you mentioned before, for a poor person to buy a kidney, okay? And there'll be an incentive for
to sell
a kidney also. All around, there are incentives. Do you want to create such a society which creates this type of international black market? So, yeah.
There's also the issue I've heard that I guess it's more for living than kidneys, but should someone who drank their liver to death and had a lot of money be able to buy a liver versus someone that doesn't have as much money but didn't cause the need to have an organ in the first place?
Yeah, the issue is a very important issue, but I don't think you have record keeping, and you're never going to. You're asking the issue, you know, academically, okay, theoretically. It's an important issue. It's like the issue of not the same, but for example, when you see three people sick in the hospital, okay, one is more sicker than the other. How do you treat? Who do you treat first, okay? It's not the same type of issue, but what you're asking is assuming you have records of everybody in terms of what their history is, what their medical history is with regard to the fact, and then determine who should get it. It's never going to
be established.
What? And Sam, I know they have
a Mickey Mantle wants to search the front of the line for a liver, even though he drank his liver away, and they gave him one, he still died.
Right, that's the point. The list is totally arbitrary. You don't have any of the facts. You're never going to have any of those. I hear what you're saying. The issue is a good issue, but I think practically speaking, it's not going to matter because the way I assume the lists are, like you say, a list. Someone got ahead of the line, you know. Those type of things. Like you get into yeshiva, you call up the right person, you get into the yeshiva before someone else gets into the yeshiva.
To the extent that there is some sort of need-based or who's deserving of it, if everyone could just go and sell everything on the black market,
right,
then it would completely bypass any possibility of having a proper, based on how long will this person live with the new organ. How much do they deserve it? Do they cause themselves? Is it a genetic thing?
Right.
All these kind of considerations just fly out the window once everyone, it's open season, everyone can sell whatever they want.
Okay, fine. All right, so what I'd like to do is just do one halacha here. This is the halacha of Pidyon Shvuyim. And apply the halachas of Pidyon Shvuyim to this particular problem. So if you look at the sugyot of... Page 23 in your handout. This is the Gemara Gittin, first edition, and then the Gemara. Daf Mem Hei Amud Aleph in Gittin, famous. It's the source of Pidyon Shvuyim. Everybody knows what Pidyon Shvuyim is: redeeming captives, okay, who are either at war, not at war, but redeeming captives who've been taken by Goyim. So the mission says, Ein Kodim Es Hashvuyim Yeser Al Kedei Demeyem. You're not allowed to redeem a captive, someone who's been kidnapped, more than his worth. And how you determine his worth, that's a different question. And the Mishnah says, why? Okay? Because of the betterment of the world. Okay? So if you go to the Gemara, what is the betterment of the world? Why is that? And the assumption is we're talking about a takana here. A takana is made that there's a certain ceiling how much you're going to pay for a captive. And the ceiling is because of Tikkun Olam. So the Gemara offers two different reasons, possibly, for the definition of Tikkun Olam, or two different reasons for the Takana. What is the purpose of the Takana? So the Gemara says, one, Mishum Duchaka Tzipurahu. It's basically because of impoverishing financially the Tzibur. If you look in Rashi, that we cannot create a situation that the community is going to become financially insolvent or impoverished because of these few individuals who have to be saved. So that's one reason. And the other reason is Odilma Mishum Delo Ligrahu Velaisek Fei. What does that mean? Basically, is that we can't go beyond the ceiling in terms of the money we're going to offer the goyim is because if we start offering exorbitant amounts, there's going to be a greater incentive for the goyim to kidnap Jews. So to offset that possibility, we have to set up a ceiling in order that this doesn't become a phenomenon or practice that the goyim are going to frequently and continue to do. So one of the questions is an economic one, communal hardship, and the other one is simply public safety. Use the term public safety. We want to retain the physical integrity of the Jewish community. The only way we can do that is to minimize the number of people who are going to be kidnapped. One of the ways to minimize it is to make sure that we're not going to offer more money than we should for a potential captive. So therefore we set a ceiling. These are the two reasons offered in the Gemara. Which one is correct, nobody knows. There's stiros in different sugyas and shas. Halacha l'maisa, we have, it's a machlokas achronim. It's basically a machlokas, mainly machlokas rishonim. So for example, according to the Yamshel Shlomo, on the spot in Gittin, Perek Dalet, Simin Samach Vav, and the Shach in Shulchan Aruch Yeradeya, Reish Nun Beis Seif Dalet, basically say that the real reason is the first reason, communal impoverishment. That's their understanding of the halacha. And others hold, for example, the Rush on the Spot, Piskei Rush, Gittin, Chelet Dalet, Simin, I should say Perik Dalet, Simin, Lamed Dalet, and the Rif on the Spot, on the Ran on the Rif on the Spot, Divrei Hamaskel Ve'ein. They say that the reason for the Takana is the other reason, simply because to diminish the issue of public safety, therefore we don't offer exorbitant amounts. So we have both reasons. The second machlokus is, does this apply to cases where you have pikuach nefesh? Where someone may hold, and there are some who hold, that in cases of real pikuach nefesh, we will give a lot of money no matter what. There is no ceiling to the amount of money that we will give. So some paskin that way, and others say no. Even in the case of pikuach nefesh, you're not allowed to give up someone for an exorbitant sum of money. Assuming that we're dealing with a case of pikuach nefesh, or put it differently, assuming we're dealing with a case of pikuach nefesh, and assuming we paskin that this takana even applies in the case of pikuach nefesh, the question is, how can you apply now the notion of either dochke de tzibura or public safety to the issue of kidney transplants? So there's one approach, and that's the approach of the Ran and Shabbos, according to the pagination of the Rif, Yutes Amud Aleph, but it refers to the Sugya and Shabbos of Membeis Amud Aleph. He paskins that when you have a conflict between an individual who needs something for pikuach nefesh, like our particular case, you need a kidney in order to remain alive, on one hand. On the other hand, you're concerned about the impoverishment of the community, then the solution is that the community's wishes override the individual wishes. His lashon is chashiv deniska derabim, the hezek, or the damage done to the community, the niska derabim, chashiv kisakanas nefashos. This is as if we are dealing with sakanas nefashos. So according to him, basically, if you're going to create an international black market, for argument's sake, as a result of selling kidneys, you are creating a situation where the community, not definitely, that's important, possibly down the line will become impoverished, and we don't care about the individual need today. That's the important chiddush. Well, chiddush number one is that the community, anything dealing with the community is sakanas nefashos. Chiddush number two is, even though today there may be 100 people in front of me who want to sell their kidneys, we will not allow them to sell their kidneys, even though someone may need it today. There may be 100 people, other 100 people who need their kidney today, because down the line, 25 years down the line, the community may become impoverished. That's the implications of that particular position. We do something for the community, even though we're not sure the community will be impoverished, even though today there's an immediate need to address, let's say, 100 people in terms of donating a kidney, selling a kidney, and giving it to 100 other people with a kidney. And here I'll quote, this is Rav Hirschler in Halacha Refuah. He actually was a Magid Shiur many years in the 60s and 70s. This is Halacha Refuah, Chelek Gimel, Daf Mem Tes. He says, Mishum tikun hatzibur ein lehitchashei b'sakanat hayachid. When you're dealing with the betterment of the community, you don't consider the sakana of the yachid, and therefore, that's why the Mishnah tells us you don't redeem someone above their value, because we're concerned about Tikkun Olam means what? Takanas HaTzibur. That's the translation of Tikkun Olam according to Rav Hirschler, which is actually the same translation that the Ran does. Ran isn't the only one who says it. The Ramban says it, and the Ritva says it also. The analogy which is drawn is Dinei Melchama. We had the question before. Are you allowed to give up your life where it's a suffix sakana for you, where it's a vare sakana for someone else? If you go to war, is it a suffix sakana for you that you're going to die? Is it? You're going onto the battlefield. Is it a suffix sakana? The answer is obviously yes. But we're not passing like the Yerushalmi here. But so what's the difference based upon Rav Hirschler and the Ran? Why are you obligated to go to war? Assuming it's, you know, a Mechemes Mitzvah, etc., or Mechemes Rishus, or Peace on Hedrin. Why?
Saving everybody else.
Yeah, so why? So because it's what? You're not fulfilling just an individual obligation, you're fulfilling what? A communal obligation. If you go through the Sefer Achinuch on the Mitzvah of Dinei Melchama by Zion Amamim and else, he'll make a distinction there. That if you would meet somebody in Amalek on the street, and you had the ability, assuming he's Amalek, that's a big question, but assuming he's Amalek, you meet him on the street, and you have the ability to kill him, so the Chinuch says, yeah, you can kill him if you meet him on the street, but as long as it's not a suffix sakana for you. But if you meet the same fellow on the battlefield, suffix sakana doesn't apply. Why? What's the difference? If you meet him on Amsterdam Avenue, suffix sakana becomes an issue in the calculus. But if you meet him on the battlefield, it isn't an issue. Sefer Chinuch says in two or three places. So what's the answer? Because if you're meeting him in the battlefield, the reason why you're in the battlefield is what? Because you're part of a community, okay? And community overrides the individual. Okay? Therefore, even if it's a suffix sakana for you, you still have to go to the battlefield, you still have to fight, you still have to kill that Amalek, assuming he's the Amalek. But if you meet him on Amsterdam Avenue, whatever the case may be, as an individual, vis-a-vis another individual, there is no mitzvah. Okay? It's not within the context, necessarily, of Dinei Melchama. He said it also with regard to Zion Amamim. There, the general halachos of the Bavli apply, not the Yerushalmi, that what? You don't have to give up your life when it's a suffix or sakana for you. Okay? So these are some of the applications to the issue of public policy considerations with regard to a renal transplant. So if we go back to the question asked at the beginning, is this sugya basically a sugya of renal transplants, selling of body parts, and public policy considerations? The answer is no. It's really how halacha works in interaction with halacha policy. They look at the public policy considerations. They may not have raised them before. They raise them now because maybe ethicists raise the problems. But when you resolve the problems, you don't simply take, incorporate whatever you heard, or even select it in terms of what you heard on the outside, but you put everything through the prism of halacha. So therefore, public policy then transforms into being public halachic policy rather than public policy. Okay.
Also, once again, the final is a week from today at 1 p.m. in this room. Those of you who can't make it at that time, you make up the May 31st. If anyone can't make it at either of those times, send me an email. Also remember, the makeup is going to be much more difficult than the, or considerably more difficult than